Hello, you guys, and welcome back to the Huddle Up podcast for KTR Radio at San Diego State. We took a quick break for the holidays, and we're back with episode 7. So much to talk about wrapping up the NFL season, so let's go ahead and get started. So we just finished, two weekends ago, we had the conference championships, and I'm just going to start off by saying not the result I wanted to see, of course.
I am very upset that Tom Brady is going to his 100th Super Bowl, but I do have a lot of confidence that the Chiefs will pull out another win this year. I think their offense is just unstoppable. You know, they're going in only losing one game. They have so many key players on their offense that I just don't think the Buccaneers defense will be able to stop. You got Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey. I could keep going. Le'Veon Bell. There's so many people. But I feel pretty confident that the Chiefs will take another win. Then again, it is Tom Brady. I feel like he somehow pulls out all these amazing wins. And they do have a home field advantage, which is very interesting because it'll be the first Super Bowl where the team does have a home field advantage. I feel that that's a bit unfair, but it somehow always works out in Tom Brady's favor. So it will for sure be a fun game to watch with, I'd say, one of the oldest quarterbacks and one of the youngest quarterbacks in the league.
Yep.
You know, I think it's interesting that Packers loss, I think, poses an interesting question. And I think that's, is Aaron Rodgers overrated? And it's going to sound like a stupid take, but you got to hear me out on this. I think because Aaron Rodgers, we know he's not Mr. Nice Guy. He keeps it real. He's going to call you out. You can see the frustration on his face every single game. And at the post-game press conference right after the game, he said about the decision to take the field goal instead of going forward on that fourth and goal. He said, quote unquote, wasn't my call. So immediately throws LaFleur under the bus. And you know what? At the same time, Green Bay could have drafted a wide receiver, made some kind of midseason acquisition for Will Fuller or somebody else, could have made it a lot easier for Aaron Rodgers. But of course, he doesn't embrace the adversity quite as easily as Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. And then the next day after the loss, he goes and he tells the front office that he wants a raise. So I don't know. Aaron Rodgers doesn't seem like the greatest teammate to me. And I know he didn't have a star left tackle, maybe arguably the best pass protecting left tackle in the game, David Bakhtiari, available for that Tampa Bay game. He also didn't have Aaron Jones for most of the game. He went out early with some kind of injury and wasn't available down the stretch, which is tough. But it's just the narrative just keeps feeding itself. Aaron Rodgers can't make the comeback. When things get tough, he's out. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to buy in on Aaron Rodgers. But at the same time, I feel like he's bluffing and he will be back with Green Bay. He's just a little upset right now.
I was going to say, you bring up a good point. I wonder if every quarterback kind of acts like that behind the camera and Aaron Rodgers just doesn't really care. He's not afraid to showcase his real self to the media. I wonder if every quarterback is kind of like that or if that's just special to Aaron Rodgers and, you know, that's what he's like. Because when you think about, like, some of the greatest athletes of all time, you'll hear Michael Jordan in, like, an interview or something, and he just sounds like a complete jerk to his teammates. But I think he does that in order to get the best out of his teammates. Maybe Aaron Rodgers is using a similar tactic, but, you know, I kind of compared him to Michael Jordan. You can't really do that. I don't want to say he's the GOAT of football, but, you know, he's definitely up there as one of the greatest. Tom Brady, I was not expecting him to go to the Buccaneers this past season. It would be very interesting if Aaron Rodgers made a similar move and decided to switch teams. I think it'd be super fun. Megan, I want to hear what you were going to say since you are a Packers fan and you would want Aaron Rodgers to leave. What do you have to say?
Yeah, so, well, going back to reviewing that game, I mean, I just think when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers being strict or, like, being, like, outward with his fellow teammates, when he's 36, MVP caliber, he knows how good he is. So he's going to be able to have that leadership quality, not really care about, like, his persona and stuff. I feel like he's just gone to the point in the league where might be retiring in the near future, maybe the next couple of years, that he doesn't need to be, like, Mr. Nice Guy. So that's what I want to say about that. But when it comes to next season and the talk about, you know, they drafted a quarterback behind him, Love, and is he going to be the next one to step up for Green Bay? I really don't think Rodgers is going to leave next season, probably not the season after. And this is because the GM and LaFleur both just shut down those rumors and pretty much said, like, no, of course, like, Aaron is our star guy. He's the one who leads our team. Like, that's crazy talk. Like, why would you think that? But also what's very interesting, because at the post-game conference after the NFC Championship, Rodgers, and I quote, he said, the future is unknown. He doesn't know what's going to happen. So I don't know if he's just teasing with the media right now, but I would put money on it that we're going to see Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay for the next 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. But, oh, well, the next 2 years, I don't know if you can guarantee that, because you have to wonder what Green Bay's level of tolerance is right now with him when he keeps going out and basically discrediting, disrespecting Green Bay, the coaching staff, the front office, almost every chance he gets. And I know he is hard to please, but at the same time, Green Bay hasn't done a great job of doing that. So I'm not really sure exactly what to believe, but you have to think Green Bay is losing patience and we could see Jordan Love in 2022.
Where do you guys think Aaron Rodgers would go if he left the Packers?
Oof, that's a tough call. I haven't really thought about it in that way.
It would be kind of fun to watch him go to the Niners, because I think Jimmy G's about to be out of there. Speaking of, like, our next topic, Deshaun Watson, that's a very interesting pick for the Niners. I think that could really, like, elevate their offense to the next level. Doesn't look like Deshaun Watson is going to end up there, which as a Seahawks fan, I'm happy to hear. But yeah, that'll be interesting. I'm excited to see what moves are going to be made in the offseason.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of crazy to think about the possibilities with Deshaun Watson, because he probably is going to be going to a contender, like, because of that no trade clause. But I mean, I think with this Matthew Stafford deal, it puts the pressures on the 49ers to figure out the quarterback situation very quickly, because now in that division, you have to face Matthew Stafford, Russell Wilson, and Kyler Murray, all on very competitive teams. And the Rams might look like the best team in that division right now with Matthew Stafford, because the quarterback was the main problem, I think, last season in overcoming a couple injuries. And now that they have Matthew Stafford in place, they're only, you know, just solid quarterback play away from maybe making it back to the Super Bowl. So San Francisco 49ers are definitely interesting, but if they weren't willing to give up a little bit for Matthew Stafford, are they really going to be willing to give up that many first round picks for Deshaun Watson? Because he's going to come at a way steeper price.
Yeah, no. And the thing about the Goff and Stafford trade, I thought that was really shocking, but it just shows that the Rams, they're here to play. They're here to make it to the Super Bowl. That's what their goal is for the next season. Because, Stafford, he is a talented quarterback, but he was playing for the Lions. He didn't have people around him. So now him going to LA, which has, I think the last season was a top five, like, running offense, he's going to be able to be that final puzzle piece for them to make it through the postseason and actually have a Super Bowl or contending chance. So I, like, on my opinion, I thought that was a good move. It's going to be very, like you said, it's going to make the division with the Niners extremely difficult. The Niners are going to have to step up their game and everything. But when it comes to Deshaun Watson, this is what I read on earlier today, is he actually is thinking about wanting to go to the Jets, which I thought that was a really weird move. I heard it was in between the Dolphins and the Jets, and he favored the Jets over the Dolphins. So what do you guys think about that?
I think that's I understand Deshaun Watson wants to get paid. And if he goes to those two teams, he could definitely find a good paycheck. But if he really is serious about winning games and maybe winning a championship, I don't think that's his best bet. I think the Jets, I mean, obviously they had a really hard season. That's, anyone can see that. But I just don't think their owner is going to build a championship team, especially next year. As for the Dolphins, I think they should give Tua more of a chance. He's young. He has a lot to learn. I think he's really talented. If they give him like some more time, I think he could grow and develop into a great quarterback for them. I don't think Deshaun's a very underrated player. And I feel like if he goes to a really good team, a lot of people will be talking about him. He had the best pass record or something like that? I don't even know, because the Texans were so bad. I saw some fact or something like that. But I think he needs to go to a team where he has offensive elements around him and that he can really showcase his skills.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like Deshaun was kind of a luxury good for the Rams or the 49ers if they wanted to trade for him, because it wasn't going to take much from that quarterback position. They just need solid, consistent, steady play from that position. They don't need this guy that can absolutely elevate all the talent around him and be this crazy dual threat quarterback for them. That's not what they needed. But now with the Rams going out and getting Stafford, what are the 49ers' options at quarterback for next season? Like, if Dak's not even available, either because the Cowboys bring him back or because he's demanding too much money that the 49ers want to pay because they don't have necessarily the greatest cap situation right now. I don't know. It's kind of difficult to believe, like, what other options are left for the 49ers? Like, I think it might be Deshaun or nothing, just by process of elimination.
You know what's another factor to look at is, so they have two really impressive quarterbacks coming up in the draft. You got Trevor Lawrence, who will most likely be the first round pick to the Jaguars, and then Justin Fields. I don't know exactly where he's being placed in the draft predictions, but if the Niners could, you know, do some trades, get like a higher pick in the draft, I think that could be a really interesting component to add to their offense.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the likely path. It's either going to be multiple picks for Deshaun Watson or multiple picks for one of the top four quarterbacks in the draft. And you have to think, win now situation, how competitive the NFC West is. It's probably going to be for Deshaun Watson, but I don't know if that's what Kyle Shanahan wants. Maybe they have more confidence in developing their own quarterback. If, let's say, Trey Lance falls to them because he has a lot of raw tools, and they could develop him because he has such a limited experience. They could coach him up and basically raise him as their own. So I don't know. Yeah, the 49ers, they got a difficult decision to make, but they got to make it quick if they want to be competitive and compete for the Super Bowl.
Okay, I don't know if you guys saw Brady making this statement. It was either earlier today or yesterday, but Brady says he wants to play older than 45. He's got a few more seasons than him. Which, Nicole, that probably doesn't make you very happy since you're the biggest Brady hater I know. So
I hate Brady, but, like, you can't not respect the guy.
Exactly. Like, even though, obviously, I was devastated that Green Bay lost, I sat down and I was like, you got to respect it. He changed conferences, and Aaron Rodgers is now 1-4 in his NFC conference championships, and Brady comes and wins his first one. Like, you got to respect it. I mean, the biggest thing that I saw on the internet was going to be the big goat versus the baby goat in the Super Bowl. So I think it's going to be a great quarterback matchup. But Jake, because we heard Nicole's take on who she thinks going to win, I want to hear your Super Bowl predictions.
You know, I don't want to make my prediction. It's way too early, and I didn't even get to hear what my favorite podcasters had to say about the game because it's still early in the week. It's literally Monday, but I already made a prediction because I figured you're going to be asking for it. So I figured, all right, so Tampa Bay, they've scored at least 30 points each of their last six games. They have their starting safeties, Antoine Winfield Jr. and Jordan Whitehead, more than likely will be available and back in the lineup for this game. Reports are saying that AB is close to returning from that knee injury that left him out against Green Bay. And when you have AB and Leonard Fournette now fully acclimated to this offense, Tampa Bay finally has a running game. They have balance. They're a totally different team from what they were even midseason. I think that means Tampa Bay could actually control the clock, limit the number of possessions Mahomes gets. And I think that's part of the formula to beat them. And Kansas City, they're going to be without both starting offensive tackles, Mitchell Schwartz, who's a top 10 tackle in the league, so that's hard to replace, and Eric Fisher as well. Le'Veon Bell has a knee injury, so he's questionable. Le'Jarius Sneed, their top corner, they're thin at corner in terms of their depth, and Le'Jarius Sneed is questionable. He's working off a concussion. Working off a concussion is tough, so I don't know if he's going to be available. And it just seems like things are kind of trending in the wrong direction for Kansas City versus Tampa Bay. They have so much momentum going into this game, even though Tom Brady is coming off a game where he threw three picks. I think he's going to clean that up. He has so much experience in the big games and not turning the ball over. I mean, he's way super disciplined. I think Tampa Bay is going to end up ultimately finding a way to win this game. And I don't know. I have a hard time being against Mahomes, but Tom Brady's done it so many times. And then you add in the fact that they're playing in Tampa. They're going to have that home field advantage. It's going to be working for them to some degree. And they were 5-3 at home this season. Meanwhile, Kansas City was undefeated on the road. But Tampa Bay has been a different team since midseason. They've put it together. And I think at home, I don't know, Tampa Bay could be really dangerous. And with these new pieces and Antonio Brown, Leonard Fournette, I think as long as they play a complete game, I see them winning this thing.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was halfway through the season, and one of our episodes, I remember, Jake, you said that Tampa Bay's ship was sinking. But that didn't age well, because here they are. So, flip that around a little bit.
I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl, and then the ship was sinking. I was out, and now I'm back in. It's been a crazy ride for the expectations with this team. It's crazy. So, real quick, Deshaun Watson, so people think he's going to be able to force his way out. And in reality, he actually has no leverage. And I don't know if people realize that. because he can sit out, but he's going to lose a ton of money every day that he does, even if he retires. Because if he retires, he has to pay back the signing bonus that he got when he signed his extension with the Texans, which is $27 million. And the Texans can fine Deshaun Watson $95,877 for missing minicamp, $50,000 for each day of training camp missed, and $620,000 for each preseason game missed. And in this scenario, if Deshaun Watson were to retire rather than play again for the Texans, they could also get $26.1 million back on their salary cap. So the Texans don't really have a ton of reasons to trade him unless he retires. And this entire situation really is going to depend on Deshaun Watson's willingness to actually sit out and lose money. If he's willing to swallow it, then the Texans are, it's going to be a Carson Palmer situation where he sits out half the season, Bengals finally pull the trigger and they trade him to a contender. And that would be the case with Deshaun Watson. And the Texans hired David Coley, former Ravens passing game coordinator, and the Ravens passing offense was absolute garbage last season. So I'm not really sure how this hire is going to, how that would even mesh well with Deshaun Watson. I think that just added fuel to the fire. And I don't see, there's really not a ton of reason for him to come back except for financial incentive. But that again, that alone might be enough for him to come back, especially with this being his first big contract. So he has yet to really get paid. I think that extension was going to kick in this year. So he would be coughing up a ton of money by not reporting back to Texans camp and sitting out.
The funny thing is they get paid so much. You think that is really a huge factor. And I mean, obviously for us, like $1,000 sounds like, oh, that's a lot of money. But for them, it's probably like a dollar compared to what we have just because of the amount of money they make every year. So I wonder if that's really a factor that Deshaun Watson is deciding on, like the financial issue or not, because I don't know. I feel like when you make 20, 30 million a year, it's like, would you rather, you know, play for a really good team or make more money and play for a worse team?
I mean, that was a big contract though. Like they paid him at least like a top five quarterback. And I want to say it was for at least 36 million a year or some super high average annual value. It was like either top. I think it was it's the second biggest behind Mahomes's per annual average value. So it is a lot of money to consider, and he would be losing a lot potentially if he really did sit out.
Damn, I didn't realize how much they could find him though. That's crazy. It's a lot.
That's why it's with the players, they don't have much leverage when they hold out. Like they lose a ton of money. That's why you saw Melvin Ingram. He did that hold in thing in the preseason and training camp because he didn't want to get fined for not being there. So he was there. He was a leader, just sitting on the sidelines, coaching up guys. He just wasn't participating in any drills without any financial security and that guaranteed money.
I'm sad. I'm actually sad the season's over. This is my post-NFL season depression.
Are they doing the XFL this season? Not that I paid attention to it at all, but I saw like The Rock bought it.
No, that's coming in, I think, 2022 or something. Okay. They have to make the actual development plan for like that financial like stability and to make sure the league will actually last. There's not a ton of problems and like, yeah, it's not, and they it takes a while to put a league together because you have to get all the players, coaches. So yeah, I don't think that's coming till 2022, but yeah, my real quick take on this Stafford Goff trade. So the Rams traded so many first round picks, and it seemed in the past, it seemed like they would actually hold on to their picks this time. That wasn't the case. And now they won't have one until 2024. But I would actually say this trade is a win-win. The only loser here is Jared Goff. the possible implications is that San Francisco might actually have to pursue Deshaun or they have to go after somebody in the draft. And it's going to take a lot of draft capital to do that. But yeah, I think this is a win for Stafford. He's going to be able to showcase his talent on more often than not on the national stage, finally get that his respect. And I would assume he's going to be successful in that Rams offense. I'm just curious to see how far he can actually take him and elevate that offense. And as far as, Jared Goff, dude, that guy is going from a great situation in LA. He just bought his nice, comfortable LA mansion. They featured it in Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
I think he spent a little too much time, you know, working on the chip shots in the backyard instead of actually applying himself in the film room and trying to win football games for the Rams. So yeah, this is what happens. I think he got comfortable, and I think he was just going through the motions. He was just enjoying being the Rams starting quarterback and having the spotlight of LA. And now this is what happens. He gets to go to Detroit and with a very uncertain future. I mean, at least he's getting paid, but he's getting paid in Detroit now. And I don't know, but I feel like that could be his last, you know, his last experience, his last chance or opportunity at being a starting quarterback.
Okay, but like really, like he's still gonna get paid like
yeah.
How many million a year? Like I can't feel that bad for the guy.
You can have fun in Detroit. There can be fun things to do there.
Exactly. He still gets to play the game he loves and get a fat paycheck. You know,
that's I mean, as far as actual success on the field goes, I mean Matthew Stafford wasn't able to do a ton there. So it's hard to really believe that Jared Goff is gonna be able to change anything there. Even with the new regime, with the new GM and the coach. I think the new GM, well, he's from the Rams. So he brought Jared Goff over right now, I guess. But I like what the GM is doing, but I'm not sure Dan Campbell is going to be able to change the culture and the trajectory of the Lions right now.
All right. So this James Harden trade is very interesting. I think the Nets have built this amazing offense. They got Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden. Okay, great offense, but can you win a season just based on your offense? I don't know if they have the defense to take themselves to a championship. Obviously, they have three amazing powerhouse players. It'll be very fun and exciting to watch them. But the defense, you know, what my coach always used to say is hustle and defense wins games. Then again, that's for youth girls basketball, not, you know, the best basketball players in the world. So I'm sure there are many ways to get, you know, around that. If you score more points and your defense sucks, then you can still win the game. But that's something interesting that I think the Nets will have to adjust to and look at. As for the Rockets, I think it was actually a very smart move on their part. I know they didn't want to get rid of Harden. I've never been a fan of Harden just because he's a ball hawk. He's not a good team player. He did not gel well with Russell Westbrook. Obviously, they got rid of him too. But I think for the Rockets, now they have John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. I think those are two players that are similar enough but are different enough to the point where they can play good together. They play good team ball. They communicate well. And I think that will actually be a way better duo for the Rockets rather than Westbrook and Harden. So I think it was kind of almost a win-win for the Rockets. They, you know, I don't know if they were too happy about Harden leaving, but Harden didn't want to be there and it was obvious. He was going to strip clubs before games or whatever. I think this was a good move for the Rockets and it sounds like James Harden is happier playing in Brooklyn. So overall, I think it was kind of a win-win situation, but it'll be interesting to see how these two teams adjust with their new roster.
Yeah, this move to me felt more about convincing KD to stay in Brooklyn beyond this season, because he could opt out of the season, become a free agent and go sign somewhere else. And with how dysfunctional it has been with Kyrie and his antics off the court and his uncertainty, his inconsistency, you don't know what you're getting with Kyrie on a night to night basis. And there wasn't a much of a supporting cast left with Kyrie off the floor. And because Spencer Dinwiddie out for the year, I think he tore his ACL, and then you're leaning a lot on Caris LeVert. Now, Caris LeVert, I thought this was interesting that they sent him away in the deal. They gave up a total of three first-round picks and Caris LeVert, sent him to the Rockets for James Harden. And Caris LeVert, without KD or Kyrie this season, he was averaging 31 points per game, 5 rebounds a game, and 9 assists per game. That's a crazy stat line. And he's basically taken on the role of a superstar with Kyrie basically out of the picture. So I thought there was a lot of upside at keeping Caris LeVert around, but they were willing to make that move instead. And Caris LeVert, he's only 26, and Houston immediately flipped him to the Pacers in part of a four-team deal. And that was even more confusing to me. I thought Houston got a great asset back to them, and then they immediately shipped him out for Oladipo. Oladipo, super injury prone. And I feel like he's way closer to his ceiling than Caris LeVert. But yeah, Caris LeVert, I think that maybe the Pacers come out the big winner in this trade just by getting Caris LeVert. So I think that remains to be seen. But yeah, Houston overall, they end up getting a total of 4 first round picks. They got a first round pick from Cleveland as well, and they got all these pick swaps, which is crazy. And they get rid of Harden because Harden kind of very similar to Aaron Rodgers, hard to please. And it was getting tough there. And so now the Rockets got a complete overhaul. They got a band of misfits with John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Christian Wood. Kind of interesting is that they've been interesting this season. They don't have a bad team by any means. But meanwhile, for the Nets, this felt like desperation getting James Harden. And I feel like it might come back to bite them, because this is a very boomer bust roster. And if it's not a title, I feel like this thing's going to self implode, and you're going to see a lot of moving pieces. You're going to see, I think you're going to see KD gone. And because I don't know if he can win a title with James Harden. I'm not sure, because that the depth behind the bench they have right now is not great. And their defensive rating is also quite atrocious. And since the Harden trade, the Rockets are 6-3 with the best defensive rating in the NBA. The Nets are 6-3, but a really ridiculous, fun, entertaining, almost catastrophic 6-3 with the worst defensive rating in the NBA, which would be an all-time record low. Record worst. So, yeah, I don't know. Again, this feels really boom or bust to me, and I can't say this automatically puts Brooklyn in the finals like a lot of people think it does. I didn't really consider Brooklyn automatically in the finals going into this season. I felt like it was already very boom or bust because of Kyrie. I thought he was the X factor, but now you add Harden in the mix, and I'm not sure Harden's necessarily willing to be super focused and determined on and being focused on basketball only. I don't know. I feel like he leans more towards Kyrie than he does have that determination and leadership of KD.
No, Jake, I totally agree with you in the fact that when I saw this trade, the first thing I thought was kind of like a too many cooks in the kitchen kind of deal. Like, maybe it's going to be too much to handle because you have three MVPs playing on the same team. There's only five playing on the court. You got to have someone to take a back seat. So when you're talking about the Nets like going into the playoffs and stuff, I just feel like it's going to be way too much to handle. And you're going to see exactly like you said, Jake, self implosion. But what I thought was really interesting, now that we're talking about like the defense part of the Nets, is last night, I don't know if you guys saw the stats or watched the game of the Wizards and the Nets, but it ended up being 149-148. The Nets lost with like 4 seconds left. And that is such a high scoring game. I just think that's a perfect example of how, yes, you can have three insanely good offensive players, but there's no defense. There's no way you're going to make it further.
It's also difficult to see like who takes the backseat in this situation with Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant all on the floor. The only guy that is mature enough, I think, to actually do it is Kevin Durant. And it's ironic because he left the Warriors to go to Brooklyn to be the guy. He wanted to be the main option. He wanted to be the reason why he brings a title to the Nets in Brooklyn. And I don't think he wants to take the backseat, but he might have to because of the egos of Kyrie and James Harden. And it's hard to have sympathy for KD because he temporarily ruined the NBA going to the Warriors. So I honestly don't have much sympathy for him. And then he also chose to play with Kyrie. Like that, he chose him as his co-star when he could have gone to the Clippers. He could have played with Kawhi. And instead he chose Brooklyn, the Nets, and Kyrie. And I think Brooklyn realizes they made a mistake with Kyrie. And I know KD definitely thinks he made a mistake with Kyrie. And that's why the Nets even made this move in the first place.
That's an interesting take. We all know that Kevin Durant is not afraid to hop teams. So I wonder if their season is a bust, where he'll end up after this season.
Yeah, I know. I think that's something to watch for sure. Like, KD's immediately going to be on Twitter. He's got the Twitter fingers going. And he's gonna be texting everybody saying, looking to see where he can go. He's probably maybe Miami, because it seems like they need some new juice now. After this season, probably they will, and or somewhere else. I mean, yeah, it's difficult to see KD staying at Brooklyn long term.
I would love for KD to go back to the Warriors. They are hurting right now without Clay. Steph is Steph. He's playing great, but they definitely need another dynamic player like KD.
Well, you're going to have Klay coming back next year, and then you just bring KD back, and it's the same mm-hmm. team from 2 years ago. It's just like, and I know that's why not all championships are built the same way. The Warriors championships are going to be the easiest three championships that you'll ever see in basketball history. So it's just not fun to watch. It's bad for the NBA.
Their first title of like the Warriors dynasty, they didn't have KD. They had Draymond, Steph, and Thompson, and didn't they beat OKC in the, who did they play like for like 3 years? in the championship. I think it was OKC.
Yeah, they beat KC, yeah, I think a couple times, yeah, to get to the finals. I mean, they only won one time with Steph and Klay, and then I guess you still had prime Draymond. Draymond's not in his prime anymore. But they only won one title, like, basically with the NBA balanced. KD going to the back to the Warriors would just make everything out of sorts, and it's not good for the NBA if that happens.
I would love to see it.
That's like the Yankees every offseason. They just buy their way to a championship, or the Dodgers. Obviously, those guys were struggling for a while. The Dodgers, eventually you keep spending money, it's going to work out. And that's what happened this past season. So it's hard to respect those teams and those championships.
But yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the sign of a good owner. Your team wins. That's what you got to do. You got to get good players.
But in baseball, you don't even have the same set salary cap. So not everybody's even on an even playing field in the first place. Dodgers and the Yankees are always going to have insane leverage over other teams because they can afford to actually pay these guys and give them that long-term security even at such a ridiculous value that other teams wouldn't even think about.
Yeah, I think that's something that baseball, that the MLB needs to change. I don't think that's quite fair. I like how the NFL and the NBA deal with the salary. Because, I mean, the Mariners suck every year. They, like, the Yankees, like, I feel like the same in baseball. The teams that are good are continuously good every year, and it's not as exciting to watch. Whereas, like, the NBA, one team will be really good for, like, 3 years, and they'll suck, and then, you know, same with the NFL. It's, like, it's always changing. It keeps it fresh, and I think that's something baseball kind of needs to catch up on, but that's just my take. I'm not the biggest fan of baseball, as you guys both know. But hey, maybe if the Mariners were better, I would get more into it.
There you go.
That's why, yeah, it's tough for people to really resonate with the NBA because players have so much star power and leverage because the NBA is star dependent, whereas the NFL, you can live with cutting a star and having success long term. I mean, you saw what the Patriots did with AB. They made no exceptions for him, even though he was arguably the best wide receiver in the league at the time. So in MLB, it's the same thing. Like, it's not nearly as star dependent. So that's why there's been this always some parity. It's almost always still actually two different teams in the World Series. So that's what sets the MLB and the NFL apart from the NBA.
You know, speaking of baseball, as we all live in San Diego, I keep hearing a lot of things about the Padres. The Padres are making a lot of noise with all the trades they have. I believe they just got 2-3 really good pitchers. Jake, correct me if I'm wrong. I know Blake Snell is one of them. I can't remember the other two guys' names, but Twitter's been blown up with how good the Padres are going to be this upcoming season. So I think that's really exciting. I would love for San Diego, you know, to be a better sports town. Maybe the Padres improving would be, you know, that's kind of one stepping stone to get to San Diego to, you know, maybe getting more into sports and having more sports teams. It'd be awesome to see the Chargers come back, but it's just, yeah.
it would be nice to see the Chargers come back, but it's difficult to see where they get that stadium deal done. But, and then even so, even if for that to happen, you'd be leaving money on the table, leaving LA for San Diego in the first place. And with Dean Spanos as the owner, one of the cheapest owners ever, it's just not going to happen. So that's just too good to be true. But yeah, as far as the Padres go, they look like they ain't messing around. They're done with the Dodgers being the Dodgers and spending willy-nilly all they want. They want this championship now, and they're ready to go right back at the Dodgers in the postseason again, and this time get done that unfinished business, because it's an arms race right now, and the Padres stack up pretty much in every way, shape, and form with the Dodgers.
Nice. That's gonna be exciting to see. I actually had one, so I wanted to bring this up before we wrap it up, but obviously the Heat were a great underdog team last season. It was super fun to watch them make it all the way to the end, but they're starting off right now, they're 7-12. So Jimmy Butler's been out for a while, I think still for COVID regulations, which also, actually, let me start with the COVID regulations. So I don't know if you guys are playing fantasy right now, but I'm in two fantasy leagues, and I swear every single day you just see another player out because of the COVID protocols and stuff. So that has put such a damper on how the teams play. It's adding a whole another like unworldly factor to the NBA season, which I think is super interesting. but crazy to watch. So anyway, Jimmy Butler's been out because of the COVID regulations. So I just want to know, do you guys think the Heat can turn it around for the end of the season? Because right now it's not looking like they'll make it there.
You know, last season, I don't think, in the beginning of the season at least, anyone thought the Heat would make it to where they made it. So I think with their coaching staff, I think Eric Spoelstra, how do you say his last name?
Spoelstra.
Okay. Almost. I think he's one of the smartest coaches in the NBA. I think he has the talent on his team to take his team to another playoff, maybe even another finals. You know, they have young guys and they work really well together as a team. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw them towards the end of the season kind of pick up their game. Remember last season, Jimmy Butler was just, I don't know. I feel like once he got to the playoffs and once he needed to start playing amazing, he stepped up to that plate. So, you know, maybe later in the season, we'll see that this year. I would love to see it. I like the Heat. I like to root for them. I think they have a good program and good owners.
Yeah, Miami Heat, I don't know. They're an interesting team. And last season, they were kind of built on this culture of grit and being a dog, you know, being scrappy, getting after it, being out-physicaling the other team. It's kind of similar to, like, that Clippers team in 2018, before Kawhi got there. They were built off, you know, just outworking everybody. And that's why they proved everybody wrong, and they went way farther than people actually thought they would. Miami was the same way last season. And now you have to try to figure out a way to recapture that magic. Obviously, Jimmy Butler hasn't been quite as consistent as you would have liked him to be. And I think he had the COVID issue as well. It seems like they just don't have that the juice that they had last season, the momentum. And I wonder who's going to be, if they have a guy that's going to be able to step up for them and kind of lead them on a run here for some wins. And they've been linked to Bradley Beal quite a bit, and I wonder if they pull the trigger on that. I kind of feel like they will, because they do have some assets. I think that can make it work. And the Washington Wizards told Bradley Beal that they would not trade him to anybody that he did not want to be traded to. I think he would love Miami, Jimmy Butler, and to team up with Bam as well. I think that's a great situation. So I think that's a move to be on the lookout for. I forget who it was. I think it was Chad Johnson, I want to say. He was told by, I think, Jimmy Butler that the Heat were going to make a big splash in the offseason. They did it, but I think they will make a big splash at some point, and I want to say it's going to be for Bradley Beal.
I think that would make the Eastern Conference super exciting. I would love to see that. I'm rooting for the Heat. I'd rather see the Heat do good than the Nets. So, yeah. I do have...
How much of that is because of Tyler Hero? I want to know that. And Duncan Robinson, because obviously you're, like, in love with those guys.
Sorry.
She's like, it is what it is.
I don't know. I find them entertaining. They're fun to, like, follow on social media. They have good stories. They're attractive. Yeah.
She saw Duncan's LinkedIn, and it was over. She already had her team, so.
Exactly. I do have sold right another there. Topic on basketball that I think is very interesting. So, moving over to college basketball, we all know it's the first day of February today. March Madness will be approaching us shortly. What do you guys think are the chances that our San Diego State Aztecs will make the big dance?
I'm not very hopeful. I'm not very optimistic, because I just feel like this team is too Matt Mitchell dependent. I feel like they don't have the same diversity of scoring that they did last season. Last season, I want to say they had like five guys averaging double figures. That's always great to see with these March Madness teams, and it makes it a little easier to predict how far some of those teams will go when they have that kind of diversity in scoring. They're not too dependent on one guy, but they also, last year's team had that go-to guy in the clutch situations where you need a guy that's going to make a play, get you a bucket. That's Malachi Flynn. Now he's gone. Now you don't really have that same it factor with this team. And this team is kind of struggling to find themselves. And I, with how deep the Mountain West is this year at the top, it's looking a little more competitive this time around. San Diego State doesn't quite have the same amount of talent as they did last season. I'm not so hopeful right now, but there's still some games to go. And I'm interested to see what's going to happen. I know Lamont Butler has kind of stepped up in a big way for them, so maybe he can bring up some juice for the rest of the season. But yeah, so far right now, I wouldn't say it's looking too good. I mean, in the latest projection, I follow this account, All Sports News. It has San Diego State as the 12th seed right now, projected in the tournament, and that's like barely making it. That's if assuming San Diego State even wins the Mountain West Championship. Well, they've kind of struggled to win the big game the last couple of years, so that's all but guaranteed.
You talk about the Aztecs being too dependent on Matt Mitchell, but I feel like last season they were way too dependent on Malachi Flynn, and maybe that's why this season they're not playing as well. I do think they have some other players that aren't as good as Malachi, but they can kind of step in for him. You got Trey Pulliam. I think he's a really dynamic guard. He's good at defense. He passes the ball super well, and he can shoot. Like, when he's on, he can shoot. I think he adds a lot of depth to their defense, but then again, not as good as Malachi Flynn. You also got Lamont Butler. He's a freshman. We've kind of seen him in the past couple of games. He's been making a lot of noise recently, but he's very young. So I think with Lamont, as he starts to get more minutes, he's going to develop and become, you know, a way better player. I feel like college is a great time for these players to develop because, one, the men are not fully grown. Don't they stop growing when they're like 21 fully or something like that? That's like when they end puberty or something.
Yeah.
So I think he still has a lot of time to develop, a lot of time to get stronger, a lot of time to, you know, start selling with the team. And I think, you know, if he has this development quickly in the next couple of weeks, he could be a super strong asset for the team. But, you know, all of that is a maybe. They do have good key components that definitely can help the team, but it'll be interesting to see how they do in the Mountain West tournament. But it's also very exciting and hopeful because I feel like as a fan, you know, there is hope. If they don't suck, you know, there's hope for them. They could make it. They could win. Last year, I think everyone was predicting, oh, they're going to win the Mountain West tournament, and they didn't. But, you know, hey, maybe they had too much pressure on their shoulders, and this season it's a little more relaxed, and maybe they can come out on top. That'd be super fun to watch. As a fan, of course, I'm very hopeful. I would love to see them win.
That is true. The lesser the expectation, sometimes it's a lot easier for teams to play with confidence. And you look at San Diego State right now, you look at their top scoring options, it's right now Matt Mitchell, 15.5 points per game. Right after him is Jordan Shackle, 13.7 points per game. Nathan Mensah, 9.6. So you almost have three guys averaging double figures. And then Terrell Gomez has actually been a little bit of a spark here recently. So maybe if they get him going a little bit more and he's a little bit more involved with a bigger role in the offense going forward. I mean, there is a little bit of reason for optimism. You still have Trey Pulliam as well and Lamont Butler. Providing a little bit of spark, but right now I just don't see the confidence and the energy that they had last season. So right now I'm not super optimistic about them, but I'm not going to write them off just yet. Nobody wants to talk about the Utah Jazz winning 11 games. Good for them. I don't know. I don't really have much to say about the Jazz.
Yeah, I know.
Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell make a good team. They're playing well.
Yeah.
It's early in the season. Okay, actually, I have a question. It's very early in the season. I want to hear your guys' predictions for the two teams in the finals.
It's not even mid-season, man. That is true. I mean, I better hear this excerpt, like, played in, like, everywhere in June on KCR.
When he's right, yeah.
When I'm right. Man, if I had to go right now, well, my finals prediction last year was actually Clippers-Celtics. And I think that would be my pick right now because I think those teams are playing great team ball. And maybe the Celtics have finally learned from last season's struggles. They were really bad under pressure in those final minutes. They're really undisciplined, making a lot of stupid mistakes. I think they've kind of cleaned that up so far. It is the regular season. This isn't postseason basketball. Postseason basketball is way different. It's way more physical, way more intense, way more pressure on the star players. But I don't know. Jason Tatum was my preseason MVP pick. And so far, he's been pretty good for them. He had to sit out a little bit with COVID. So wait for him to kind of pop off and get back into his recent form. And I don't know. I really like the Clippers right now. It's hard to pick against LeBron.
All right. And Megan, what do you think?
Okay. This is, again, very early. So I'm not a very thorough prediction. But I was thinking Celtics, Lakers. And that's just because I think LeBron is just too red hot. Like, you could – yes, the LA Clippers are doing extremely well right now, but like, it's just way too early to tell. So I think that's where I'm gonna go. Lakers, Celtics. I'm writing it down on paper. That's me.
All right, I would have to say my pick would be the Nets and the Clippers. for Jake's reasoning, I think the Clippers, if they keep up their momentum, we could definitely, that could be a final contender easily. And the Nets, they have, I feel like they're almost expected to be in the finals with their, you know, three big superstars. So I want to see them live up to the hype.
Yeah. Hey, Clippers right now, best 3-point shooting team in the NBA. That's the Ty Lue effect right there. So I don't know, Clippers, that's the team nobody's talking about because of the hype last year. Well, I think it's fair to buy in now.
I like that. It's going to be a fun one to watch, definitely. Okay, well, as we're closing off the NFL season, which, again, I already mentioned my post-football depression, got the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday, so that will be a fun one to cover next week in our podcast. But that's going to be it for today for Episode 7 of the Huddle Up Podcast. So you can go ahead and follow me, even though I know you probably won't, on Instagram at mtownsley with two Ys and on Twitter at Megan Townsley. And I'm just going to save like 5 minutes of time for Nicole to say all of her information about her Twitter and Instagram. So go ahead, Nicole.
Go follow me on Nick Time for Sports. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube.
Nice.
Kept it simple.
Only above.
Yeah, go ahead. Give me the follow as well. Instagram and Twitter at JakeBird419. If you follow me on Instagram, maybe DM me saying you're a fan of the show, because I keep that more a little private, so I might decline you if you don't say anything. but the Twitter is public, that's open. So yeah, also feel free to shoot me any DMs if you have any questions that you want to be answered on this pod, and we will answer them in a future episode.
Okay, well, that's it for this episode of the Huddle Up Podcast. We'll see you guys next week. Exit music!